last summer. Hello and welcome to another episode of Clark and Addison Born into the Ivy. I'm your host David Butler and this is your midweek episode. The Cubs once again ended a three-game series against an NL Central foe by winning Game 3 against a very tough starting pitcher, but dropping the first two in the series. This time at Wrigley Field, though. Again, the offense broke out for the third game, this time for 6 runs after only getting a total of 3 in the previous 2 games. In today's episode, we will review the Red series, talk a little more about the current state of the offense, review some of the rehab assignments that some of our injured players are going through, and discuss and analyze the NL Central specifically. Remember, the best way to help grow the podcast is to listen to every episode, like the episode, share the episode with your friends, and if you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Join our Facebook group at Clark and Addison, Born into the Ivy, and our Instagram and Twitter with the same handle. It was not a great series against the Cincinnati Reds. If you told me before the series that we were going to win the game against Andrew Abbott, I would have told you that I liked our chances to at least win the series. It's funny how things work out sometimes. The Cubbies just couldn't get anything going offensively in either of the first 2 games. It was nice to see some of the team do well in Game 3, but we saw the same thing happen in Game 3 in Milwaukee too, and then they struggled against the Orioles as well. The Cubs made Zach Littell look like a strikeout pitcher that he's not. He hadn't struck out more than 6 in a game since March 29th against the Colorado Rockies. He's a good pitcher, but the Cubs' offense made him look even better than what he is. Worse yet, the Cubs were gifted a game on Monday due to a Nick Lodolo blister and could only muster 2 runs on Nick Martinez and then nothing else in the last 5 innings, managing only 3 hits in total on Game 1. This team and this offense have to do better. A preview for this weekend series against the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cardinals come up into this weekend with a matchup that will feature all primetime games, as Saturday's matchup will be on Fox and Sunday's will be on ESPN. The Cardinals are 4-6 in the last 10 and 58-58 on the season. They have a better team at home than on the road with a 32-24 record at Busch Stadium. They have a team ERA of 3.88 at Busch this season, which is 17th in the majors, and they are averaging 4.55 runs per game at home this season. The Cubs are averaging 5.33 runs per game away from Wrigley Field, and their team ERA is 4.05. The Cubs, once again, on paper at least, are the better team. The Cardinal offense is led by Ivan Herrera, Wilson Contreras, and Alec Burleson. Nolan Gorman always seems to find a way to get a big hit against us as well, especially against any right-handed pitchers. Sonny Gray and Matthew Liberatore have led the pitching staff through most of the season. The bullpen will be a little more vulnerable with the loss of Ryan Helsley, who is dominant for them. The pitching matchups will be on Friday, Matthew Boyd versus Michael McGreevy, Saturday, Colin Ray versus Andre Pallante, and on Sunday, Shota Imanaga versus Sonny Gray. The pitching matchups for all 3 games definitely favor the Cubs, in my opinion. Boyd versus McGreevy, Shota versus Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray has not been nearly as sharp as he was to start the season. However, the Saturday matchup worries me a little bit, depending on how the weather will be. We have all seen Colin Ray and non-favorable pitching weather, and it's generally pretty darn hot in St. Louis. So, you would expect that that will be the case this weekend as well. Actually, I know it's going to be, so we'll see what happens. But the pitching matchups definitely favor us, and it should be a good thing. Speaking of starting pitching, Cade Horton. Does everyone realize just how good Cade has been this season, specifically the last 5-6 starts? Who has noticed how much better he's been at home? Cade is pitching to the conditions at Wrigley, and he's brilliant to do so. He's had 4 straight games, and 5 of his last 6, where he's gone at least 5 innings and given up 0 runs. Not 0 earned runs, 0 runs, period. He's also gotten better as the season has gone on. In July, he had an ERA of 1.52, and he hasn't given up a run in August. His home road splits, though, are very drastic. He owns a 5.19 ERA away from Wrigley and a 1.61 ERA at home. His walk rate is down at Wrigley, and his K rate is up. Again, the K rate is going up as the season goes on, too. Most importantly, in the 15 games he's started slash pitched in, the Cubs are 10-5. That's pretty damn good. He's the Cubs' third-best starter right now, and it's really not close. Even when Tyone and or Assad come back, he's the third-best starter until proven otherwise. Did everyone realize that after his disastrous outing on Tuesday, the Cubs' Andrew Kettredge had an immaculate inning that throwing 9 strikes and striking out the side in the 7th inning on Wednesday? He is only the 6th Cub ever to accomplish the feat. 9 pitches, 9 strikes, 3 strikeouts. Pretty awesome. And now for our guys who are on rehab assignments. Javier Assad at AAA. Assad had a second rehab start, third total, on Wednesday, and he looked pretty good overall. In both starts combined, he's gone 8 innings, given up 8 total hits, walking 3, and allowed 2 earned runs. He's also struck out 6 and overall kept hitters off balance. That's a very good sign. Hopefully, he gets at least one more really good outing. I'd like to see him make it through 5 innings in the next start, though. Jameson Taillon had his first rehab start last Sunday, and it did not go nearly as well. He gave up 7 hits, 2 hit batters, 7 runs, and 2 home runs while striking out only 1 in 3 innings of work. Woof. That was awful. It was awful to read. Hopefully, he improves that dramatically as well. Miguel Amaya in 7 games at AAA. Miggy has gone 4 for 15, hitting .266 with 2 walks and 4 strikeouts. Hopefully, he can find his stroke a little bit better and come back and help provide a spark for this team. The question is, does Reese McGuire go off the roster when Miggy comes back? Or do they run with 3 catchers? It'll be interesting to see what they do. Because, frankly, even if just one of those catchers is a bat, all 3 of those bats are far better than what John Birdie is providing for this team right now. Am I wrong? What is John Birdie providing for this team? I don't dislike John Birdie, but I don't know that he's helping us win any ball games right now either. Porter Hodge, although Porter isn't technically on a rehab assignment anymore, you would expect that he will be back with the big league club when he is healthy and able to be what Porter Hodge is able, or we know he is capable of being. Since being sent on his rehab assignment and then assigned to AAA, Hodge has had a rough first 2 appearances, going 1 1/3 innings, giving up 5 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and striking out 3. In his last 3 appearances, though, he's gone 3 innings, giving up 4 hits, 1 walk, 0 runs, and getting 3 strikeouts. 2 of those came in last night's outing. Hopefully, the latter version continues to pitch well, and we can get him back and sharp as ever. Obviously, the offensive woes continue for this team. Since the All-Star break, here are the stats for every player. Batting average and OPS. Justin Turner is 6-for-22 with a .273 average and an OPS of .818. Oh, by the way, Justin Turner now has a .303 batting average against left-handed pitchers. I'm sorry. That's what he's here for, to hit against lefties so that other guys don't need to because they're left-handers and they're still young. John Birdie, 0-for-3. Seriously. I just said it, but seriously. Carson Kelly, 11-for-47 with a .234 average and a .634 OPS. Reese McGuire is 6-for-21 with a .286 average and a .701 OPS. Ian Happ, OPS is a little better than I thought. 14-for-58, .241 average and an .835 OPS. Dansby Swanson is 12-for-60, .200 average and a .567 OPS. Dreadful. Kyle Tucker, 11-for-52, .212 average and a .696 OPS. I'll note that he also has 17 walks though, guys. Michael Busch, 9-for-59, a .153 batting average, and a .497 OPS. As hot as he was before. He is so cold right now. And Michael Bush is susceptible to streaks like this up and down where he's just hot or he's cold. But we have too many guys like this. Ian Happ is that way. Seiya Suzuki is that way. Michael Bush. Come on. And when they're all going bad at the same time, that's dreadful, as we know. Pico Armstrong, 16 for 63, 254 with an 802 OPS. Moises Ballesteros, 1 for 2, 500, and a 1,500 OPS. Obviously, only two at-bats. He had that big double that drove in three runs. That was awesome against the Brewers. Seiya Suzuki, 10 for 58, a 172 batting average, and a 603 OPS. How awful would that have been if he hadn't just had the game he had on Wednesday? Matt Shaw, 17 for 54, a 315 average, and a 994 OPS. And Willy Castro, 4 for 20, 200 batting average, and 500 OPS. Is Kyle Tucker hurt? Ultimately, should it matter if he's out there playing? Does Seiya finally break out of his slump? All these things are yet to be answered. I think it matters if he's hurt. If he's hurt, sit him for 10 days. Give this guy a break. But if he's not, then what is going on? The offense has got to get better. Otherwise, what I'm about to talk about with the NL Central, we have no chance at. I know that some people are starting to say we don't have a chance of winning the division now anyway, being four games back. But I don't think that's accurate. I'm not saying we're definitely going to, but I'm saying it's not over yet, boys and girls. The NL Central right now reads as the Brewers at 70-44, the Cubs at 66-48, four games back in the Central. Well, team, or folks, we have the third best record in the majors still. People underestimate that. The Reds are 60-56, the Cardinals are 58-58, and the Pirates are 50-66. The Cubs are down in the Central by four games. Does this hurt? Abso-freaking-lutely. I know that the Cubs have struggled and are struggling since June, but let's be real. If I told you at the beginning of the season that the Cubs would be 18 games over 500 at the game 114 mark, you'd have been very excited about that. I know I would have. If you say you wouldn't have, you're lying. There's no way you wouldn't have been excited about that. To be frank, is there anything that the Cubs can do to stop what is happening up north? Nope. Outside of when we play them, and make no mistake, when we play them for our last five games, we have to do a much better job than we did when we played them in Milwaukee. Our Cubs are 4-4, 500, against a team with the best record in baseball. The Brewers are a team that is on one of the hottest streaks any of us have seen or will see, likely. They are 44-16 during their last 60 games, over 162 games that would put them on pace to win 119 games. This is tied for the 19th best run that any franchise in any MLB season since 1876. That's when MLB started. That's how insane this is. Tied for the 19th best streak of any team ever in 60 games. The last few times a team had a streak this good was in 2022. The Yankees went 44-16 and were out to a 99-63 record and lost in the ALCS. The next time before that was 2001 with the Seattle Mariners, who went 47-13, won 116 games, tied for the most ML record, most wins of any team, tied with the 1906 Cubs. And in 1998, the Yankees went 46-14 en route to a World Series win and 114 wins. Let that sink in. For what it's worth, the Cubs in 2016 had a stretch that where they went 42-18 en route to winning a total of 103 games and winning the World Series. I know it's frustrating that what the team up north is doing. I know it's frustrating that the front office and owner didn't ensure that we added more talent to this roster at the trade deadline. But folks, this team is still 18 games over 500. They can still make a strong push to end this season. There's 48 games left. to the season. If the Cubs can win 24 of those games, that's just 500 baseball. Then they will win 90 games. I know we want and should want and expect more. I'm just saying 90 wins should put us in the playoffs. I think they can go 30-18. That would give us 96 wins. Lest we not forget that part of the reason the Brewers are on this run is because of a guy named Andrew Vaughn that they traded for with the White Sox, who absolutely sucked with the White Sox and is tearing it up with the Brewers. Who expects this guy to keep this kind of pace up? We've all seen it before, where a guy gets on a heater and then fizzles into the night. I don't normally like to wish for players to not play well, but when they play in Milwaukee or St. Louis specifically, I do wish that. It's part of being a fan. I obviously can't guarantee that Vaughn will come back down to earth, but I'd say the odds are pretty good that he does. The sooner the better. Just like the odds that our hitters break out of their slump soon in our favor as well. I want to leave you with a few more notes here. For this season, in April the Cubs went 15-9, May 18-9, June 13-13, and in July 14-10. The worst season they had was in June, or month that they had was in June at 13-13 at 500 baseball. Last year in 24, the worst month the team had was 10-18. That's a far cry from 13-13, folks. That's what a bad ball club looks like. Is it frustrating? Yes. But this team should not be given up on, and we need to rally around them and help provide the spark that the front office refused to do by trading for somebody better, for another impact bat or a frontline pitcher. I get some of what they were asking for was insane, but I'm going to go back to what I said at the trade deadline podcast. Merrill Kelly was there, and the Cubs should have gotten him. They should have gotten a rental. They could have given up. We can't play all these prospects. They should have given up a couple of decent prospects to get Merrill Kelly to help us down the stretch. That would have been huge. Absolutely huge. Don't forget to join us on Facebook group at Clark and Addison Born Into the Ivy. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Clark and Addison Born Into the Ivy. Leave some posts or comments in there about what you'd like to hear or what you thought about today's episode. However you subscribe to your podcast, please like and subscribe to Clark and Addison, Born Into the Ivy, so that you don't miss out on any of our future episodes. Also, if you feel so inclined, please make sure to leave a 5-star review and leave me some comments. If you are enjoying this podcast, make sure to tell and share it with any of your friends who might be a Cubs or baseball fan. Have a great day, and let's go Cubs. Paisley, send him home.
Go Cubs, go! Living on the water down in Basin's last summer.